News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It's the Brett Witterbull Show. And it's a big day today. As you all know, people are talking about this election in Virginia. We certainly want to get your thoughts on this. There are local elections around the area, though not in Mecklenburg County. There are elections over in South Carolina. There are elections in Huntersville, number of other places. And certainly it's a day to get up and get out there and engage yourself in that civic duty that we all carry with us. And just curious to get your thoughts on things. Are you feeling more optimistic? Are you feeling pessimistic? Do you feel like none of this stuff really matters? Because we are right now in the greatest crisis of our history, of our lives. I certainly would love to speak with you about that at 704-570-1110. Joe Manchin did something incredible late yesterday, but it wasn't included in my program because we were moving so quickly through different phone calls, including the legendary Ryan, who checked in with us to accuse us all of being insurrectionists. Yesterday, Joe Manchin came out and basically said, you progressives here with this bill, I just want to do the infrastructure bill. You keep adding to that other bill, and I don't support any of this stuff that you're adding on. I don't know what you're doing. You're playing games. It's a shell game. It's a scam. It's a flim-flam deal. Yesterday, Joe Manchin came out. This is cut number 16 here. Joe Manchin, concerned about the cost of this increasing progressive human infrastructure bill. Go.
What I see are shell games, budget gimmicks that make the real cost of the so-called $1.75 trillion bill estimated to be almost twice that amount.
Which we knew was going to be the case, right? We knew that was going to be the case. And then I get this alert just a couple of minutes ago before I came on the air that Chuck Schumer is announcing, and he's all excited. He's doing the Chucky dance. He does the Chucky dance when he gets all excited. The Chucky dance is being done because he says that they've got some kind of a deal on prescription drugs. No, not putting people on prescription drugs, but paying for them. But it's not like exotic and big and huge and bold and any of that sort of stuff. It's one of these like kind of like piecemeal, slap that together with that, put that over there, and let's hope for the best. Again, none of this stuff is being clamored for by the people in this country. I know lower prescription prices, that's really good. This is going to drive the cost up of the bill even further. Manchin's already telling you it's too expensive, so let's add more stuff onto it. Democrat lawmakers reaching a deal on legislation to lower prescription drug prices to be included in Joe Biden's social spending package. The agreement is far less far-reaching than earlier Democratic proposals, but still represents progress on an issue that the party has campaigned on for years. The agreement would allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices in limited instances, prevent drug companies from raising prices faster than inflation, and cap out-of-pocket costs for seniors on Medicare at $2,000 a year. So you'd be on the hook for the first $2,000 a year, and then after that, it would go back up to the government kind of covering it. Democrats scaled back their earlier sweeping measure because of concerns from a handful of moderates that would have harmed innovation from drug companies, developed new treatments. Kyrsten Sinema, Scott Peters, who's a Democrat from California, he's a congressman. Kurt Schrader, Democrat from Oregon, were among those moderates and helped lead negotiations in this regard. Now, again, let me state the obvious. This human infrastructure bill is really no closer to passing than it was yesterday because you still have Joe Manchin concerned about the cost of things. And the cost is something that really matters. Cost is a factor. So now you have this narrative coming out where Joe Manchin says, I didn't sign off on this framework, so I'm in no rush to get this deal done. Now, remember, Joe Biden is coming back from Europe where he was napping, and the word that rhymes with napping. I'm not going to say what that is because I'm a polite guy in a polite show, but you've heard the rumors, so I don't have to point it out to you. But he was napping and clapping, something like that. There is Joe Biden coming back, and he's expecting to come back and get everybody together. And let's get this bill done. Let's bring this bill across the finish line. Well, Joe Manchin says he didn't sign off on the framework for a $1.75 trillion social spending bill before it was released from the White House, and that he didn't think there's a rush to get a deal. No, said Manchin, if he had signed off on it. The White House knew exactly where I stood. There was a couple of concerns that we had that we needed to work through. I've been here long enough to know that when you say signed off on things, you got to keep your word, and I'm not going to be a liar or make anyone else a liar. That's why I haven't signed off on it yet. Now, how does this tie back to this election that's taking place? Sure, there's a mayoral election in Massachusetts. There's a defund the police election in Minneapolis. There's a governor's race in New Jersey. But really, it all comes down to Youngkin versus McAuliffe. Because if McAuliffe loses this race in a state that Biden won by 10 points, what's going to happen is you're going to see this Congress is neutered. And I'm serious. If McAuliffe goes under against Youngkin, there's going to be a great deal of fear and trepidation and worry and panic setting in among the Democrats, because they have practically turned the entirety of the executive branch and the congressional branch over to the squad. And the squad has taken this ship and driven it right into an iceberg. This administration has become the Titanic. How bad is it? How panicky is it? Well, here's James Carville, cut number 20. This is him talking last night to Anderson Cooper over on the CNN. And James Carville says, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to send another dime to these people that want to run for this until this thing gets passed. I need this thing to get passed. It's social spending. It's got to get passed. Go ahead, James.
I sent 47 emails on behalf of Terry McAuliffe. I'll probably send more emails as much as any three people in the Democratic Party. And I'm not going to send another one or ask anybody for a dollar until they vote on this and pass it. And I think every Democratic donor ought to say, you know, if you give $25, tell them I'll give $50, but I'll give it after this is passed. I have no idea who's right or who's wrong in this, but we got to move this thing. And, you know, right now, I think this economy is really good. It really favors workers, and we got to come in and finish this deal and get this thing done. And that's my way of doing this. No more denario until we get this thing passed and done.
He knows it's not going to get passed. He knows that McAuliffe's going down tonight, and he knows that this is going to be a disaster. The only news that's come out of this climate was a pledge by Jeff Bezos to do billions of dollars to fight climate change. This is incredible. So I want to ask you a question. How do you feel about this Virginia race? I know there are people who feel like they're going to steal it. Well, no. Do you think Youngkin's going to win this thing? News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It's the Brett Winterbull Show. Hey, the 704 Coat Drive presented by Charlotte Mechanical, benefiting the local Salvation Army. Yep, it concludes on Friday, November the 12th with Zip Up Day. Zip on over to Dilworth Neighborhood Grill with brand new or hardly worn coats. Be greeted with food, music, sports mascots, and Zippy surprise in this drive through Donation Day. That's Friday, November the 12th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Don't forget your face coverings. Visit 704coatdrive.com for more details. 704coatdrive.com for more details. All right, I want to say something that's very important here. President Biden is speaking in Glasgow, Scotland right now, and he's talking about the climate change issue. We're going to dip in there for just a moment, and then I'm going to take a couple of phone calls. But let's hear what the president is saying. Apparently, he's talking about competition with China doesn't mean that we have to be in conflict with China. Go.
Yeah, I want to make sure there's no misunderstanding. It's competition, not conflict, and so there's no unintended. Yeah, Peter?
Mr. President, you're touting on this visit your $1.75 trillion plan that includes climate, but your party is still not united behind it. Senator Joe Manchin yesterday called it budget gimmicks, shell games, and a recipe for economic crisis. Today he said he never signed off on the framework. So do you have a specific commitment from Senator Manchin to support your Build Back Better bill, yes or no, and how do you respond to those criticisms? And I have a quick follow-up.
Number one, I'm not going to talk about the specifics of my conversations. He will vote for this if we have in this proposal what he has anticipated, and that is looking at the fine print and the detail of what comes out of the House in terms of the actual legislative initiatives. I believe that Joe will be there.
No, he
with
won't.
With regard to the issue of whether or not he thinks that he's worried about this being inflationary or going to be a negative impact on the economy, I think that I've made it clear to Joe, and we'll continue to, and we will, that as I've apologized for repeating, Peter, but 17 Nobel laureates on economics said it's going to lower inflation.
Just stop. I can't. I don't want to hear any more of this. Because I have to make a correction. I said something that was inaccurate, factually inaccurate, and I'm going to keep myself to account here. There are elections in Mecklenburg County, Pineville, Huntersville, etc. They're not elections in Charlotte. That is from my good friend, John Stewart, who, of course, corrects me, and I do appreciate the correction. I want to give accurate information and not be considered some kind of a weird Yankee interloper who doesn't understand the nuances of things where he lives. 704-570-1110. Okay, so this guy right now, this president, just said, oh, of course Joe Manchin's going to vote for this thing because it's going to be great, and I have 17 Nobel laureates who say it's going to be great. Nobody cares, Mr. President, about what the Nobel laureates say. If you don't understand this, you have to understand the fundamentals of the American people, Mr. President. People hate academics. Right now, they can't stand superintendents, school boards, principals, a portion of the teachers, Randy Weingarten, professors at universities. Nobody wants to hear from those people because they're not grounded in reality. They're grounded in thuggishness. That is it. That is all they do. And so don't try to impress us with your Nobel laureates. It doesn't matter. It doesn't work. He's your guy, Joe Manchin, and he has set a price that he will not go above. And now he comes out and says you're playing a shell game. Stop it. Be more accurate, like I was, and then I wasn't, and now I am. Connie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Connie?
Oh, I just wanted to say that I have never seen a time when a governor's race in another state, I'm in North Carolina, has been so important as the one in Virginia to everybody.
What is it? What's got you watching it so closely?
Well, I just feel like, you know, if the Republicans can take this election, that the rest of us have hope.
You're right. You are correct.
I get sick to my stomach every time. You know, every time Biden opens his mouth and spends more tax dollars.
That is true.
It just makes me sick.
And we get two for the price of one, and I'm going to tell you how it is. You've got that component, right, where you get to send a strong message to the Biden administration that they're doing it wrong. But number two, this represents the death knell, the death rattle for all things Clinton. Because Terry McAuliffe, he's the last guy on that team that's still relevant, that thinking they can bring him in and he can work that Clinton magic. There is no Clinton magic. The cupboard is bare. People have been sick and tired of the Clintons since about 2001.
Yeah, well, that would be an additional blessing.
Yes, yes, it would, Connie. Great to hear from you, 704-570-1110. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here. You know, we're sitting here, now he's talking about inflation rising as the holidays are approaching. You are creating the inflation, Mr. President. You are pumping trillions of dollars out there, and you're about to pump another $3-5 trillion out there. You're causing the inflation. Stop inflating. Stop inflating. Begin deflating. Begin deflating him and put him on the airplane and bring him back here so he can take his loss like a man in the Senate. News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. Let's just jump back in here for a quick second because apparently President Biden says that the election in Virginia has nothing to do with his agenda.
First of all,
let's hear this question and this answer that's going on.
Who is focused on the environment should be worried. We've got a lot more to do beyond what we've done. We've done more than we've ever done, though. That's the point. And more has to be done. And I didn't have a single member of this conference come up to me and say, are you going to pass what you have? And what do you think is, how's that going to affect it? What are you going to do? What they're looking at is what, in fact, has happened in terms of everything from dealing with deforestation to what we're going to do on Build Back Better and how we've been able to focus now. I mean, when's the last time you heard world leaders sit down together and agree that what they're going to do is when they deal with the needs of the infrastructure of other countries, that they're going to focus first and foremost on
whether or not what the climate impact is on that. So I think, look, this is a there's a reason for people to be worried. I'm worried. I'm worried if we don't continue to move forward and make the kind of progress we're now making, that it's going to, I mean, we throw into jeopardy the prospect that we're going to be able to keep the temperature rising above 1.5 degrees Celsius. But I'm optimistic because I think there's a, how can I say it? I guess maybe the best way to say it, to Scott, is what I feel is that the populations of each of our countries have a different perspective than they did at COP25. I think there is, I mean, not because of necessarily any of the leaders of any of our countries, including mine, that all of a sudden people are seeing these things happening they never thought would happen. They're seeing people drown in their basements in Queens, New York because of flooding and rain.
That was because of illegal apartments.
You know, more territory burned down in the United States just since the first of the year than it makes up the entire landmass of the state of New Jersey. They've seen hurricane with 100 top winds of 178 miles an hour. I mean, so they're looking at these things. They're seeing more, the water's warming. They're seeing a whole range of things occurring around the world that haven't happened.
New York and New Jersey and Massachusetts is around the world.
Whoa.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't get what I used to get when I started to, there's no reason why anyone would remember this. But back when a fine Republican, a guy named Dick Lugar, was from the state of Indiana, and he and I were either the chairman or ranking members of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Okay.
This is over 20 years ago. We ended up proposing, and it worked, but it got no enthusiasm, a thing for debt for nature swaps. People looked at us like, what in the hell are you doing? Why are you forgiving the debt so Brazil won't, you know, burn down more of the forest? Or why are you doing that so they will do? Now, everybody goes, whoa, what else can you do? What else can you do? So I think there's a whole different attitude that's out there. And I think this is being led, and I'm not being solicitous here, I think this is being led by, my granddaughters and their friends, that generation. I think they're out there going, whoa.
Oh, my gosh. Stop. Just stop. I don't want to subject the people of this audience to this anymore. He's rambling. He goes, we got to help the rest of the world, like New Jersey and Queens and Massachusetts, which had 178-mile-an-hour wind, and California. He's not talking about the rest of the world. We've already funded the rest of the world. It's called $450,000 for illegal immigrants that have been separated. You want to pay those folks. You want to pay everybody. We're going to run out of money. You know what? You want to know what action looks like in 2021? I don't like this guy particularly. But Jeff Bezos comes to this climate change conference in his fancy jet today. Here's what he announces today. This is Jeff Bezos. Cut number 19.
Today, I'm pleased to announce a $2 billion pledge allocated directly to restoring nature and transforming food systems. This is part of the Bezos Earth Fund's $10 billion commitment to fight climate change, enhance nature, and advance environmental justice and economic opportunity. Together, this $3 billion in pledges will drive a new threefold nature agenda for the Bezos Earth Fund, focused simultaneously on conservation, restoration, and food transformation. We must conserve what we still have. We must restore what we've lost. And we must grow what we need to live without degrading the planet for future generations to come.
See, that's great. That's not a politician. That's a business guy with a ton of money who's going to go throw it against the climate change challenge. I mean, this isn't hard, Mr. President. It's really not hard. A bunch of politicians sitting around blah, blah, blahing each other is not going to get you what you need to do. News Talk, 1110-993 WBT, Brent Winterbull Show. Let's go back on the phones and check in with the great listeners of WBT. Terry is up next. Hello, Terry. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, Greg, it's Pedro again.
Good to talk to you.
Listen, to you every day because I know, without a doubt, you're more intelligent than I am. But I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Do you know what one of the definitions of the epitome of stupidity is?
No, what's that?
Ryan.
Ryan? No, from yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, no. He's
if he would read true history of this world, not just of the United States, he would understand what socialism is and what it does to countries. Instead of reading the comic books of the left, maybe he would understand. Plus, you take my main man, who I'm positive is more intelligent than he is, and I will hang up and listen.
All right, buddy, I appreciate it. Here's the thing. I've gotten some feedback in the overnight on Ryan's call yesterday, and the last thing I would want to do is dissuade anybody from calling the program. Here's the thing, though, all right? And this is a hugely important point. At some point, he's going to wake up one morning and be like, what am I doing? Like, this is not the way I want to go. I want to go more towards free markets. I want to go more towards freedom and liberty and all of that sort of stuff. I want everybody to make money. Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, I want everybody to realize their fullest possible potential. You know why I feel that way? Because, like, I don't hate rich people. I hate criminals and crooks, but I don't hate rich people because they are people who have come up with an idea. Maybe it's starting a business, investing, becoming a skilled lawyer, stock trader, whatever it is. And them making money does not take money out of my pocket. The fundamental misunderstanding in our culture is that money is a zero-sum game. I get paid $50, so that means you didn't get paid $50. No, I can be paid $50, and you can be paid $50. Depends on what you're doing to earn the $50, or the $100, or the $10. That's all it is. That's all it is. It's like sitting in your house and being angry that people are in Las Vegas laying bets and making money on games, and that somehow you are being prevented from doing that. No, you can go to Vegas and bet and lay action on games and win or lose, depending on how you bet. But the fact of the matter is, money is not a zero-sum game. The fact that Donald Trump has money, or that Hunter Biden has money, or that Joe Biden has money, or that Bill and Hillary Clinton has money, they didn't take that money out of your pocket. They went and figured out a way to grift it, graft it, take it, make it, earn it, whatever. And that's it. That's it. The number one misunderstanding about economics, and this is a tragic thing because we spend all this time on DEI, not Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, but we spend all this time on DEI in the colleges and things like that. We don't have an understanding of how economics works. If I have a cake and I eat a cake, it doesn't mean you were denied a cake. You just didn't buy a cake, or you don't have a cake. You got to make a cake. This is what it comes down to. So that's why people are so, that's why people on the left are so jacked up all the time. They're angry, they're furious, they're concerned, because they feel like when you get something, they haven't gotten that. Well, they haven't gotten it yet. Start working to getting it. Rodney, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Rodney?
Hey, Brent, how you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for calling, sir.
Hey, I got a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
On this climate change.
Yes, sir.
We need to trip Chuck Schumer, Pelosi, and Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Put them on on Air Force Two. Send them over there with Biden.
Yeah.
And they don't come back until they get a damn battery that'll get them back over here.
Till they get a what?
A battery.
A battery. Oh, very good. I like this plan. You're using science. That's a science approach right there, Rodney. That's a great idea. So you get them and you say, hey, you take the jet over, but now you got to get a battery to get back over. I would not fly on like an electric plane, or I'd be afraid that we would run out of, like, that 9-volt would just start sputtering, start flickering. I mean, look, why are we not using Mother Nature to its highest possibility? Why are we not hydrogen vehicles all over the place? Why are we not having neighborhood nuclear reactors to power our stuff? We have these isotopes and these elements that we can use. Why are we not doing this stuff? Why is it that AOC is able to go and buy a Tesla when in reality she ought to be driving around DC on a in a sail-powered car. Wouldn't a sail-powered car be a thing of beauty? We could all be on the roadway together, kind of adjusting the cut of the jib and whatnot, and just sailing our way down 85, 77, 485. I mean, that would be so great. Oh, what's that? Wait. Are you saying that it's possible if you have a sail-powered car to prevent the person from in front of you from taking advantage of the same wind that you're taking advantage of? Are you telling me that wind is a zero-sum game? Are you telling me that wind is discriminatory against some people? That the haves will have wind? The have-nots will not have wind? I think that's what you're telling me. Eat more beans. No, seriously. The haves will have the wind. The poor, the have-nots will not have the wind. And so what they'll probably have to do is hook up a hydrogen-powered fan to make wind. If you want wind, sometimes you have to make wind. Just don't break wind. That was really dumb. I undercut my whole point. 704-570-1110. If you want to weigh in on Youngkin versus McAuliffe, climate change, all of it, we'll take your calls. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. I am happy to be here. I know you're happy to be there. A lot of big stuff happening out there. President Biden just wrapping up his final comments on the climate change summit that he attended, COP26. And he said that the election in Virginia will have nothing to do with his agenda. We have a number of competing stories all kind of moving at the same time. You've got the Youngkin versus McAuliffe Battle Royale taking place up in Virginia tonight. I don't know that we're going to have a result tonight, though, because they're saying there's a million mail-in ballots that have come in. And so we're going to have to wait for the other couple of million that'll be cast to come in. And already Mark Elias, I know you're going to be shocked when I say this, but Mark Elias, the guy who is the mastermind behind Hillary Clinton's Steele dossier going after Donald Trump, he already filed a lawsuit saying that there's going to be a lot of mail-in ballots, like 300,000 more mail-in ballots are going to come in. And so we're going to have to wait to count some of these votes over the course of days and weeks. Come on. Raise your hand if you're suspicious of that kind of a lawsuit. I'm very suspicious of it. But then there's this, and this is sort of a chance for you as parents and as concerned citizens and folks that are active in your community to kind of sound off in this regard. This is the headline from Heather Hollingsworth and Carolyn Thompson, writing in the Associated Press. This is a broader picture of our country. And it goes like this. GOP push to politicize school board races gets election test. School board races, once sleepy and localized, have become the new front in a culture war raging across the nation as resentments over COVID-19 restrictions and anti-racism curriculum reach a boiling point. On Tuesday, voters weigh in on dozens of races that have been dominated by debates over masks and vaccines, race and history. The outcomes will decide not just the district policies, but also whether the education fight has staying power as part of the national discourse and becomes a rallying issue for Republicans in the 2022 midterms. Conservatives have eagerly taken up the cause as they look to move past the coronavirus pandemic and reframe the discussion on racial injustice in America as a rewriting of history. I haven't moved on from the, by the way, I have not moved on from the coronavirus pandemic in that I want the Chinese to be held to account and to write checks with trillions of dollars in them to the countries that they helped to destroy over the last 3 years. I want a full investigation that tells us about the collusion between Randy Weingarten and the Biden White House. And I want to know more about what Fauci knew, what he did and what he didn't do. So no, I haven't moved on past that. I want our kids to get a good education. And I'm going to tell you something right now. When I look at the way the education game is played in this country right now, I am incredibly disappointed. And I'm disappointed in the administrators and the politicians who have created this system of failing public schools around our country. Now, in almost every jurisdiction in this country, you have schools that are underperforming and underperforming in a serious way. You have administrators that understand that, well, that's just how it's always been. Some of the schools perform well. Some of the schools are underperforming. That's just the way it's going to be. And do you know what their position is? Their position, and make no mistake when I say this, I am dead serious. Their position is, well, you know, some kids are just not going to perform as well as other kids. And so, you know what we're going to teach the kids that are underperforming? We're going to teach them that they're victims. And we're going to teach them that they need to get activated as social justice warriors rather than learning calculus, trigonometry, algebra, biology, physics, chemistry, earth sciences. We're going to give them sex surveys rather than teaching them how to write sentences and paragraphs and to understand how to encapsulate a thought with proper grammar. We're going to teach them instead. We're going to give them sex surveys. We're going to give them violent school hallways where guns are found on a regular basis rather than educating them, because education is too hard for us as administrators to ensure that failing schools are brought up to code. We'll just make them justice driven. That is a grave injustice. Every child in this country has a right to literacy. To literacy. Every child has that right. Every child has the right to learn to read proficiently, do math proficiently, before we get anywhere near the victimhood messaging that's getting pushed by these recent college graduates. Because make no mistake, these are not seasoned teachers in these classrooms that are pushing this propaganda, the weirdo sex surveys and the stuff that goes on with the CRT curriculum, right? That brings in Kendi for $25,000 and $30,000 for a 30-minute speech, right? No. That's not that at all. That's not that at all. That's the propagandists that come in and do that because they feel like they're empowered if your children regard themselves as victims. That's a fact. Mature teachers who have been around the block for a number of years have the best interests of these kids at heart. You want to know why? Because they get paid to do that as a profession. And some of them have been doing it for 10, 20, 25, 30 years. They've got staying power. What you got coming out of the colleges right now? I've been spending time at colleges recently, listening to the messaging coming out of the colleges. What you have is a bunch of people that want to get out. These young teachers want to come out into the system, and they think they're going to mold the minds of these children towards a particular political bent. Secondarily are the issues of literacy, mathematics, and things like that. Every kid deserves to have that right. We don't need your messaging coming out of your City University of New York, University of Chicago, what have you, left-wing schools of education. You've miseducated the children for a couple of generations. It stops now. And if the Associated Press is butthurt about the idea that parents are finally getting involved, that's too bad for them. They probably don't even have kids. And if they do have kids, they got them in private schools because they're afraid of the public school experience. They're also elites. Bottom line is, parents are starting to step up for kids. And it doesn't matter whether you are black, white, Hispanic, Asian, whatever, Native American, mixed race, you deserve a good education, and we, the parents, are going to take this stuff over. Now, if you don't like it, keep your kids in the private school. Hide from the hard tasks. But you know what? Leave patriotic, God-fearing, strong Americans alone. We've had enough of the lectures. We want to get to the work of educating these kids. And if Randy Weingarten doesn't like it, she can go take a long walk off a big field. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. I am Brett Witterbull. All right, so I don't normally do this, but I am going to do this because I think it's worth sharing. Over the last 24 hours, I watched two installments of a documentary series that Tucker Carlson has done. And I don't know if you guys watch Tucker Carlson's show, but he went and he did a three-part series. It's at Fox Nation. This is not an endorsement. I'm not doing a commercial. I'm just telling you that this is what I watched. He's got this documentary on the January 6th insurrection, and it's a three-part documentary. And essentially, I don't want to give stuff away. I'm just going to kind of review what I thought of it, but I won't give away any of the big reveals. Some of the stuff's really interesting, though. At its core, this thing is called Patriots Purge. Patriots Purge, and you can see it at Fox Nation if you're a subscriber. I'm a subscriber to Fox Nation. I like some of their stuff. I guess TuckerCarlson.com, he's put it up over there as well. I don't know what the details are of being able to see it, but he said it's free if you want to look at it. So you can look at it there. Essentially, the notion of this thing is that this is a second war on terror. The first war on terror is the war on terror, right? It's September the 11th. It's the fight against Afghanistan, you know, the fight in Afghanistan, the fight in Iraq, the fights in against ISIS and all that sort of stuff. Essentially, the contention of this of these three installments, I've seen the first two. They're dropping each day. I watched one last night. I watched one today. And then tomorrow there'll be a third one that drops. They're saying that we're living in a second war on terror. But the people who are targeted in this second war on terror are Americans, Americans who are dissenting, who are dissenting. And the first installment is a very interesting perspective on what happened specifically on January the 6th. A TikTok and a moment by moment from the speech that was given out on the Ellipse to all the way to the point of which the Capitol gets breached. And there are a lot of behind-the-scene clips of people who were the organizers of the march from the Ellipse to head over to the Capitol itself, where you see stuff behind the scenes where you're like, well, that is very strange. That is very interesting, including a guy named Epps, who we've talked about because Revolver News was talking about Epps, because he was the guy on the night before the January 6th protest that turned into a riot. And then the day of that event was running around trying to goad people to run into the Capitol to attack the Capitol. That guy was on the most wanted list and by the FBI, and then his name and he disappeared off the most wanted list. And the implication is that this guy was somehow involved in this operation, this counterintelligence operation that the FBI and law enforcement was running in Washington, D.C. to try to jack up Trump supporters. That's a central contention in episode one. In episode two, it focuses very heavily on how it is the arrests, the detention of the people who were in Washington on that day, who were part of the protest, in some cases, people who did not even go in the Capitol. They weren't in the Capitol. They didn't go into the Capitol. They didn't step onto the property of the Capitol. They didn't do any of that sort of stuff. And still, one particular couple had their house essentially hit with an FBI SWAT team and raided, because they were just at the protest march at the thing at the Ellipse, and they took a photograph of somebody that they said looked like them and really made their lives a living hell. These are people that live up in Homer, Alaska. But it shows you this power that exists in Washington, D.C. to not just surveil the American public, not just to thwart your protest or your voice or to do that sort of stuff. This isn't cancel culture. This is cancel culture on steroids driven by the American law enforcement institutions. Remember after the riots and the insurrection of January 6th, you had Bank of America volunteer to turn over bank records of all the people who were in Washington, D.C. for the week before and after that date. They were turning them over. Cell phone companies were doing the exact same things because, you know, they track your cell phone. So they know if you were there at the Capitol, in the Capitol, what have you. And you look at all this stuff and you just say, OK, what's the end game here? Well, the end game is, you know, razor wire around the Capitol. National Guard troops protecting the Capitol, an entire stand down day that Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin put into effect so that he could ensure that, you know, we have to deal with our white rage and all the other stuff that Millie's concerned about and what have you. Episode 3, I don't know what episode 3 is going to be about because I haven't seen it yet. I didn't even see a tease for it. That's going to drop tomorrow. But it's something that I think is very interesting to look at because I've made this point in the past and I'll make it again. It's incredible to me that the first act of legislation after the attacks of September 11th was to deploy the Patriot Act against American citizens. I always thought that was very interesting. It wasn't to deploy a law against the Saudis or Afghan terrorists or anything like that. It was to say we have to be able to get access to American citizens, reading materials, library cards, you know, television viewing patterns, whatever it was that they were trying to do in terms of surveillance. And that, to me, made no sense because nobody in the United States that was an American citizen actually went and flew those planes into those buildings. But it was the American people that paid the highest price. It's you having to take off your shoes and your belt and your clothes and mess up your hair and go through the detector and put your hands over your head. And now we're going to give you a secondary screening because we don't want to look like we're favoring one group for screening over another group of screening. And, you know, making flying effectively an impossible endeavor, even under ideal circumstances, let alone where we are now with the COVID days. But again, it's called Patriot's Purge. I thought it was very interesting. If you have seen it and you want to check in on it, if you do see it in the coming days and you want to check in on it, you know, just considering it a standing invitation, looking at this, because I think it's an incredibly important story. And it's a quick watch. It's like two 30-minute episodes. It's not like a, you know, a 3.5-hour endurance thing. What I do find striking, though, about this, just in closing real quick, is how preemptively the Washington Post had to come out with a whole bunch of reporting in an attempt to try to stomp out what Tucker had done with this production. And MSNBC has just gone mad dog crazy over the fact that this thing is running. I look at that and I say to myself, self, if they're upset about that reporting coming out, what does that tell you about their role in what it is that they're trying to do when it comes to messaging? I think more information is better. It's the way I feel. How about you? News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. So let's go back in time a little bit, shall we? Let's go back in time. There was a policy that was pushed by President Donald Trump, and it was to pull us out of the Paris Climate Accord. You had President Biden go and apologize on behalf of the United States for us pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. But that wasn't the only thing that Joe Biden's been talking about on this trip. Joe Biden talked about something else that was completely different. This is cut number 14. He weighed in on the Iranian nuclear deal, resurrecting the Iranian nuclear deal. You know what that'll be, right? That'll be cash money going to the Iranians so that they promise not to build a nuclear program. And then they'll take our money. They'll fund terrorists throughout the Middle East. And they will secretly develop a nuclear weapon that will then threaten not just Israel, but the West and other countries in that part of the world. But this is Joe Biden being incredibly naive, cut 14, on reengaging the Iranian nuclear talks.
Yesterday, together with Prime Minister Johnson and Merkel and Macron, President Macron, we came together to reiterate our shared belief that diplomacy is the best way to prevent Iran from gaining a nuclear weapon. And we discussed how best to encourage Iran to resume serious good faith negotiations. I think we're continuing to suffer from the very bad judgments that President Trump made in pulling out of the JCPOA.
Can you name me an ally that Joe Biden has reassured us in terms of the relationship with? He seems to only want to bow down, apologize, and assist the enemies of the United States of America. We cut and run out of Afghanistan. We lose 13 of our best at the Abbey Gate. And American generals speak openly in congressional testimony about how professional and proficiently the Taliban conducted themselves. We have a president of the United States in Joseph Robinette Biden who seems to trust the mullahs in Iran. But he doesn't feel so hot about Taiwan. We have a president in Joseph Robinette Biden that wants to pay $450,000 to illegal immigrants, quote, separated from family members back under the Trump administration. But you've never heard him say a negative thing about the drug cartels. He hasn't been down to the border with Mexico. Why is that? During the very first presidential debate between President Trump and then Vice President, now President Biden, I always want to make sure I say President Biden because the people who are obsessed with insurrections and big lies and things like that, you know, seem to have it in their mind that I have not said that he was President Biden, but I've said it since January the 20th. Here's the deal. He hasn't been to the border, and he's never said a crossword about the cartels. He's ready to spend $450,000 up to $1 million for a family that was separated under the Trump administration, and to make it known to the rest of the world that the caravans are welcome to come to the United States. Oh, I know, Ali Mayorkas. He likes to sit there and tell you that the border is closed, the border is secure. It is neither of those things. But I want to go back to that debate, that first presidential debate between Biden and Trump. And things got really nasty. This was the debate that was moderated by Chris Wallace. And at one point, this is heading towards the end of the debate, President Trump took a shot at Hunter Biden. And Joe Biden took extreme exception at that and began first by talking about his deceased son, Beau Biden, who wasn't part of that conversation, and then went into the Hunter Biden defense in which he said, you know, Hunter Biden has had challenges in his life and I love him and he's my son. And that's fine. I expect any father to say that about their kid. But Joe Biden knows full well that Hunter Biden was, I'm assuming is not now, but I don't know because I'm not him, was at a minimum a heavy, heavy user of street drugs and narcotics. I mean, there's video of him smoking crack. Wouldn't you think that if you were Joe Biden, you would have an acute sensitivity to preventing illegal narcotics from coming into the United States that would potentially addict or kill other young people, robbing them of their potential, having their mothers and fathers have to stand at a cemetery as they bury their 14, 15, 18, 20, 25, 30-year-old child at a cemetery. Wouldn't you think that Joe Biden would take the issue of fentanyl and illegal narcotics coming into the country as chemical warfare in an attempt to murder our best and youngest? Wouldn't you think he would make a statement about that on some level? Go down to the border. El Paso, Texas happens to be where we have the narcotics intelligence headquarters where they watch the cartels. They know where the cartels are operating. They know where the smuggling routes are. Wouldn't you think Joe Biden would want to go down there and visit that he would speak out against the scourge of narcotics and drug addiction, seeing that his son is a drug addict? He's never done it. I don't think he's ever spoken out. He and Jill Biden have never spoken out about it. I don't know if it's because they want to kind of keep Hunter under the rug, that they want to move on from Hunter being a drug addict or whatever it is. But these are two people who have the power to secure the American border and prevent fentanyl from coming in to murder your children, and heroin to come in to murder your children, and methamphetamines to come in to murder your children, and to have drug cartels come in smuggling women and very young children to be abused in their pipelines. And yet, dead silence. They want to write checks for $450,000, but they don't give a rip about saving the lives of young people who may ultimately face mortality. All you have to do is touch this stuff in many cases, and you can lose your life. And yet silence from the President of the United States. He doesn't say a crossword about any of our enemies the Mexican cartels, the human traffickers, Xi Jinping, the Iranian mullahs, the Afghan Taliban. He doesn't say a crossword about any of those people. Why is that? Why is that? He seems to want to take a knee at every turn. Why is that? Is he afraid? Is he scared of the bad guys? Is it something deeper and more pathological? News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterble Show. Let's take some calls here. People want to check in on things. Greg, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Greg? Hello, Greg. Hello, Greg. Goodbye, Greg. Corey, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, Ms. B, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Full disclosure, I'm not a Democrat, Republican, left-wing, right-wing, conservative, patriot, Tea Party, constitutionalist, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to the Hunter Biden thing, and it's no disrespect to the program, but it's not so much of a pressing issue to, for, say, me. I'm riding in the car, and I'm thinking about all those kids that was flown on that airplane in the middle of the night. And we're not trying to find out where their parents are mm-hmm. or where those kids are. But we're worried about Hunter Biden smoking crack.
Well, no. I'm worried about fentanyl killing thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans. I'm merely using the abuse, the drug abuse of Hunter Biden as something that that I think Joe Biden could connect with because he's personally experienced how deadly this reality can be. And make no mistake, Corey, we know where these kids went. These kids were trafficked into the United States by the drug cartels as cover for them smuggling in their deadly narcotics. We're never going to find who their parents are because they're going to be sloughed off to people that are sponsors, getting paid by churches, getting paid by social groups. That's the reality of that situation. But we have we are currently being targeted actively by nations and organizations that want to murder our children with chemical weapons.
I'm still sorry. That's nowhere near pressing to me than those kids.
Do you know anybody who's ever overdosed from drugs?
Yes, sir, I do.
Do you know their family?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay. How did it make you feel when they overdosed from drugs or when you saw the wreckage that was brought about on their family with that horrible scourge? I imagine it made you sad.
Yes, sir. For the parents, it was heartbreaking.
Right.
For the person,
mm-hmm.
it's lessons learned. You do what you do, you get what you're going to get.
Right. How old was that person who overdosed?
I'm at 50, so this probably happened when I was in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm. How old was the person who died?
Probably 32, 33.
Okay. Imagine it's a 14-year-old. Is that worse?
That's even horrible.
This is what I'm talking about. This is why I'm talking about this issue. Okay, this is why I'm hitting this issue because our children are being murdered. Look, I'm a partisan guy, but even I have sat here and said I support what Ann Milgram, who is the head of the DEA, who's a Biden appointee and a Democrat from New Jersey. I support what she's trying to do because she's saying that we've got in excess of 100 million doses of deadly fentanyl coming into the United States. That's coming in from an open border. We have got to pay attention to this. We have got to. I don't want to see another 12, 13-year-old lose their lives. I do not want to see that. You know, there was a very successful quarterback from the Texas Longhorns, Sam Ellinger, who plays, I think he's on the Colts right now. He's a backup on the Colts. His brother was a linebacker at Texas. He just overdosed and died as a result of consuming fentanyl. He thought he was taking an ADHD a drug that he bought, and he took it, and it had fentanyl in it instead, and he lost his life. I don't want to see anybody lose their lives, and we ought to be getting a handle on this thing in a serious way. Do you remember that guy? Remember the DEA guy that I had on in D.C. and was talking about all these people that lose their lives? The parents send him photographs of what the kids looked like and when they were happy and alive. It's terrible. Greg, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Getting a handle on this thing.
That show sounds awesome. Okay, Greg, you're banned. You're banned from the program. When he calls back now, which he will call back, Josh, tell him he's banned. Because that is twice he has insulted the audience. And I will take insults directly aimed at me. but I'll not accept insults directed at the audience. We go, we take our time, we reach out to hear his point. He is clearly a man who wants to be involved merely in shenanigans. And I don't need shenanigans on this program. Maybe you want to take shenanigans over to the FNZ sports program, or perhaps Mix, but we don't take shenanigans here. This is a deadly serious program where we break down the issues of the day. Greg, no, no. Nane, here he comes again. Hold on. I'll take him. Greg, welcome to the program. Look at this guy. It's Greg. I got you, buddy. Ah, you see? How good am I? TJ, I'm good. That was dangerous. That I was out there on the wire. I was out there on the wire as the song went. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I took that call naked. I took that call naked and afraid. Greg, no more shenanigans from you, my friend. You have made it very uncomfortable for everybody driving around out there. They want to hear your points. Now watch, he'll call back again. I'll not take him this time. I'll not, what's that? He'll be crying. He knows what he did. Shenanigans. Pete Callender on Twitter, maybe Democrats on the Charlotte City Council and Mecklenburg County Commission should take the redistricting advice from North Carolina House Democrats. That's Pete. He's actively working. This is what I like about WBT. We're multifaceted and multi-channeled. We're able to cover a number of different stories all at the same time and still distill the most important facts for you to have. All without Greg. By the way. All right, let me give you this. We have a situation forming here. You people of faith, you're going to be offended. The atheists are angry. The atheists no longer want to see people in Congress and the Senate attend the National Prayer Breakfast. No, seriously, it's a real story. Atheist activists are calling on congressional members to halt participation in the National Prayer Breakfast, a decades-old annual tradition attended by the president and other high-ranking officials from both parties. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, an atheist activist group based in Madison, Wisconsin, reportedly has reached out to every member of the Congress who sponsored the 2021 event and urged them to abandon future plans. Are we really still doing this in 2021? Said Furfurf, co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor. Year after year, scandal after scandal, and still not a single prayer has been answered. Wow, that's a lot of mustard on that hot dog. What are you doing? Gaylor went on to say separation of church and state is being disrespected with participants' mixture of politics and faith, and that, quote, their God doesn't give a fig for their mimosa-driven pleas. That's a lot of nasty. A subject line on at least one copy of the letter sent to members of the Congress read, please stop sponsoring and attending the National Prayer Breakfast. The breakfast, which unfolds on the first Thursday in February each year, is a time for the president to share his faith and for members of the Congress to display rare bipartisan agreement on matters of spiritual significance. Now, if Annie doesn't believe that there's a God, then why is Annie so upset? Why does Annie want everybody else to join her club? That's the big question I have. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993-WBT. News Talk 1110-993-WBT, Brett Winterbull Show underway as we get ready for the results, which should be starting to come in a couple of hours. We've got Youngkin versus McAuliffe. People have been asking me all day, do you think this is a bellwether for the rest of the country? Well, historically, we've seen a couple of moves. We saw a McDonald win back in 2009. That resulted with, it conformed with a substantial loss in the 2010 midterms for the Obama-Biden machine in the wake of Obamacare. You've seen 2014 happen. You've seen a number of these election years happen that are driven a little bit by the off-year elections. So people are looking very closely, very carefully at what it is that's going on in Virginia. The issues aren't unique to Virginia by any stretch of the imagination, but in fact, what I think is very interesting is that you have the issues emanating from Virginia and bleeding into other states, specifically the role of parents attending school board meetings, calling out school board reps, people like that. You've got issues involving the way it is that they protected the transgender student there in Loudoun County and transferred that student away from one school after being accused of a sex assault, only to go and find themselves committing a second sex assault. You've got those issues getting balanced. You've got CRT getting balanced. Essentially, it's too easy to look at this and say, that's just CRT that's driving this. It's only CRT. No, it's not only CRT. It's about the role parents are going to play in this election. Parents are the taxpayers. Parents are the funding source for the education institutions in our communities. I understand money comes from the federal government. Parents pay those taxes as well. So you've got dollars flowing out of parents' pocketbooks and into the coffers of municipalities, states, and the federal government. Those dollars are then spread around to educate our children. And parents feel like in the last number of years, whether it's weird sex surveys, odd books being put in the school libraries, or CRT, or any combination of all of that, they feel like they have been played. They feel like they have been taken advantage of. Factor in the oversized influence of people like the UFT, the AFT, the NEA, and of course, Randy Weingarten, who for a while we never knew was actually the czar for school reopenings. And she was because her institutions, those teachers' unions, write big fat checks to cowardly politicians and local school authorities who didn't want to take a brave stance when it came to reopening schools. Add to that the mask mandates, vax mandates, all those sorts of things. And what you're seeing this year across the spectrum, regardless of race, sexual orientation, age, you name it, is parents looking to hold these creatures to account. And by meaning creatures is potential governors, school board members, school board heads, superintendents, what have you. So this race is going to be a big deal tonight, and it's going to reverberate around the country because these issues reverberate around the country. I could easily come in here tomorrow starting at 3 o'clock and take nothing but education calls, calls from parents, calls from teachers, calls from administrators, and everybody would have a different perspective. But I would hope the unifying perspective would be the desire and the need to make sure our kids are getting educated in a safe and effective way. Pure and simple. Pure and simple. Now, you factor in what it was that was the particular outrage that took place in Virginia, and you cannot overlook this. Remember what happened when Merky Garland came in and testified about his order that went out to the FBI and the Department of Justice more broadly to make sure that they were going to be doing the surveillance and the application of the Patriot Act and whatever else they wanted to do. I know he said that wasn't the case, but we know darn well that Merky Garland did want to try to deploy the federales against the parents who showed up and were objecting. Of course, he called it threats of violence and violence. That's all I care about, even though my son-in-law runs Panorama, which is a huge CRT and social information aggregator designed to target the children. We only wanted to talk about violence and threats of violence at the meetings. He says that, but we know what that really means. It really means there's going to be professional door kickers outside ready to come in and take your parents to Gitmo. Okay, I exaggerate. They're not going to kick the doors in. They're going to be invited in to take your parents to Gitmo. Okay, not Gitmo, but you get what I'm saying. Remember, you always Gitmo when you Gitmo. Here's the thing. You're going to see a big pushback tonight. Now, either McAuliffe is going to lose or he's going to get the scare of his life. And this guy, being a nudnik Clintonista, that's right, I said a nudnik means a good, not a good guy, he is going to take no appropriate lesson from this either defeat or bare win. He's going to think he's got a mandate, just like the guy in the White House thinks he's got a mandate, though he's got a tied Senate and a four-vote margin in the House. These politicians are not going to take the right message. And what that means is, no matter what happens tonight between Youngkin and McAuliffe, I think Youngkin will win, but I think it's going to be tight. No matter what happens in that race come 2022, there's going to be, what's the term they used to use in the cartoons? It's clobbering time. That's what I think you're going to start to see happen. Question is, what happens on messy NBC tomorrow, and what happens on the Clinton News Network? Why do I bring that up? Because I want to point something out. If Glenn Youngkin wins this race tonight, you're going to see almost no mention of this tomorrow on Morning Pompadour, with Joe and Mika, with his sockless dress shoes and his guitar, thinking that he's some kind of a dollar store version of Elvis Costello. Nobody wants to hear his stupid music, but he's not going to take the right lesson from that. He's going to be like, oh, you know, what we got to talk about today is the insurrection. Let's talk about the insurrection and climate change and the insurrection. They won't take the lesson that's intended, and they're going to continue to aggravate the parents. My advice to them is take the lesson from whatever comes out of tonight. If you get a bare win, take the lesson. If you get a thumping, take the lesson. Course correct before 22, because the whole lot of you are going to be unemployed. News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brent Winterbull Show. It's Crossing the Streams time, myself, with Bo Thompson from the Bo Thompson Morning Show. Good to have you here, my friend.
Always good on election day.
Yeah, so tonight, let me ask you a question. So you're going to watch the Braves, obviously, and you're going to watch the election results. How does Bo Thompson go about monitoring both?
Well, I mean, given the fact that, on Sunday night, it was the Hornets game and the Sunday night football and NFL afternoon games finishing up and World Series game. I mean, you know, this should be pretty easy compared to that.
So you fire, in other words, what you're telling the audience is you fire up the video wall.
I just scroll through really fast.
That's good. Do you do this thing where when you're watching
not
sports?
One of these people that has like six screens at home.
You don't have the video. Okay.
I wish I did.
Oh, me too. Believe me, I'd kill for that. Because what I usually have to do is I have to say, okay, I'm going to remember channel. I'm going to go to channel 232, and then I'm going to go back to channel 307, and I'm just like bop, 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 going back and forth. And then occasionally, you know,
going on several things at once. So if there's anything huge, you know, my phone will tell me if there's anything huge that I missed that I can go back.
So let me go with the politics here for a quick second. Obviously, you've got Youngkin versus McAuliffe. You had Mick Mulvaney on yesterday, and I would encourage folks to go back and listen to the podcast with you talking to him, because I thought he had some really great takes on the way this stuff kind of shakes out. But if history is a guide, when Bob McDonnell got elected back in 2009, which feels like 100 million years ago, that following year, 2010, you saw the big Tea Party wipeout of the Congress in the wake of Obamacare. So Virginia can be a bit of a bellwether. McDonnell was a Democrat getting elected right after Obama's big sweep around the country. So this could be a very interesting little bellwether for tonight, couldn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, and we've touched on this off and on, but to me it really, if Youngkin wins, then to me the thing to watch is how does he behave in the aftermath, and how is he treated by fellow Republicans in the aftermath, and then do you have, how's he treated by President Trump in the aftermath? To me, that's going to be fascinating here, because as we've alluded to along the way, this hasn't been your prototypical Trump joining forces with candidate, do the rally the night before, stand on stage together thing. I'm not saying that Youngkin doesn't appreciate Trump, and Trump obviously was on TV this weekend,
right?
Talking about hoping that he wins. He stopped just short of saying he thinks he's going to win, but said he needs my base in order to win. So if he does win, and again, this is what the polls are suggesting right now, but you and I both know that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But suppose he wins, to me, more than perhaps any race in the last. Any race that's outside of the big election year, this is the biggest off-year race, most interesting race I think we've seen post-Trump.
Now the question becomes, once this gets cleared through, are we off to the races for 2022, because that's the next big thing coming our way?
Yeah, and by the way, when I say post-Trump, I mean post-Trump getting elected. I think it's absolutely off to the races. I think tomorrow is day one. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we sort of, hyperbolically say that every year. Oh, the next election begins at 12 o'clock the next day.
Right.
I think in this case, it really does, because I think there are a lot of people sort of waiting, and a lot of people in the media is kind of waiting to see how is this going to reset, you know?
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is I can think of a lot of issues that have driven elections, the war on terror, taxes, Obamacare, whatever it might be. I can't remember one that has so galvanized the country like education has just in this last 3-4 months, with kids going back to school. You had the mask mandate fights and things like that. But what we saw with Merrick Garland and that letter and the feds and Loudoun County, and this thing, it's taken off like prairie fire.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how last year you had the pandemic, but you had, social justice sort of paralleling that at the same time. And I remember thinking in June of last year, man, I can't remember a time where two stories were, simultaneously this much at a fever pitch.
Right.
And you're right. Now we have a different part of the pandemic, the vaccine debate, kind of side by side, and in some ways crossing, intersecting with this CRT and the amount of involvement of parents. And it may end up being that this election ended up in large part with Youngkin and McAuliffe hinged on comments made by McAuliffe about parental involvement.
This may be an issue, just by the way. I guess there were issues voting in Virginia in person if you weren't wearing a mask.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so Matt Schlapp, who's Mercedes' husband, he runs the ACU, who does CPAC, chairman, said that he was rejected from voting because he was maskless. I was told at my polling station I couldn't vote without a mask, he said. I just want to make one observation about this. You got to have that thing in your pocket just in case, because I'm not going to get turned away from voting by purposely not having a mask in my pocket. I'm going to put that mask on and go vote.
I'm glad you said that, because that was my first thought, too. I mean, my first thought was, come on. I mean, even if you disagree with whether or not you should have to wear it or not, you know that the odds are that you're going to be asked about it, so have it there.
Right.
Don't risk not being able to vote. The other thing I thought of was, back to that theme of different issues intersecting at the same time, I thought, take the politics out of it. Just the very fact that something is going to impede the voting process today. I mean, and of course it would end up being something over a mask. I mean, in a way it's almost fitting, but it's sad too.
Are we expecting a broken water pipe at any point to happen?
that would be the trifecta, wouldn't it?
Oh, it sure would. It sure would. Okay, finally, something we can develop. I'll mention it to you, and we can develop it tomorrow maybe a little bit if we want to get a little looser. Dan Aykroyd actually supports cancel culture in comedy. He says offensive material should be rightly canceled for its hurtfulness.
You mean, for example, when you say you call someone an ignorant slut?
Ah, there you go. Yes, yes, that would not be acceptable. That's correct. That would be unacceptable.
I'm starting to immediately think of transgressions.
There's a lot of them.
There's the movie Trading Places. There's, I'm sure if you look hard enough, you can find something in Ghostbusters. I don't know.
Sure.
It's an interesting statement for him to make, because does that mean now that everything in your past that would fall into the category deemed by somebody offensive, should that be canceled?
Well, you know what? He ain't doing any club dates. I mean, he's, for all intents and purposes, retired.
He gets residuals.
Yes, he does. That's a very good... I think back. That was a very offensive scene, or five, in the Blues Brothers. What am I doing here?
the Blues Brothers. I mean, I'm sure we could make a list that's probably into the double digits.
Okay. In addition to all the stuff that's going to be popping overnight, including I'm hoping for you for a Braves win, what do you got coming up? Who you got coming up on the big show tomorrow?
Well, we have, of course, post-election analysis from Brett Winterble.
Woo-hoo!
And Vince Coakley will also be checking in tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to have my election night tandem. We're usually in studio tonight, but this year there's no local elections, but Kenny Smith and Tricia Cotham, I'm in contact with them. Tim Boyum from Capital Tonight on Spectrum News. The morning after the election is always, I like to run through everybody's opinion on what happened the night before, and so we'll hold true to that tomorrow. And top of that list is 8:35.
Big stuff. All right, Bo Thompson, go get ready, my man, and we'll pick it up on the other side.
And Brett Jensen in studio tomorrow, too.
Brett Jensen.
All right, man. Have a great night.
All right, man. You got it. News Talk 1110 993 WBT, Brett Winterble Show. What's today? Today is it was Tuesday, right? We're Tuesday? Halloween was Sunday? Do you still have Halloween candy around your house? Do you, Josh? Do you, TJ? Because I'm sitting here. I've got I've got a healthy pile, bucket pile of candy left over from Halloween two nights ago. I don't know what to do. What is the appropriate disposal method of Halloween candy? Because clearly, and I'm serious, please don't. It's gone bad by now.
By now?
Are you going to eat meatloaf from 2 days ago? I mean, who's eating Laffy Taffy from last Halloween?
Oh.
I mean, this is, so I want to know what's the proper disposal method. I don't have a dentist I can sell it to.
One at a time. That's proper.
So I should keep them and eat them, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't know about this. I remember where you used to be able to take like a garbage bag full of candy to the dentist and he'd pay you. What was the going rate? Josh, you were telling me the going rate was $5 a piece back then. Is that what it was?
Wow.
Yeah, you could really make
inflation brought those numbers.
Yeah, you know, Biden, he's pumping money into the economy, so you know, the doctor's paying $11 a sucker.
Now, I do know someone who gave out all their candy from last year that didn't get used because there was no trick or treat.
No. Was it lollipops?
I'm not sure what it was.
Cinnamon discs?
It was like a grab bag of several things in the bag.
It can't be chocolate. Please tell me that it's hard candy.
If an 8-year-old is not going to care, I promise you that.
Skittles.
All one Skittle now. It's just like melted into one.
It depends on where you store it. I mean, if you're putting it up in the attic during the hot season, you know, you're going to have kind of a glob. But I don't know what the appropriate, do I throw it in the garbage? Remember, we had that story just a couple of weeks ago about the wrappers don't decay. Yeah. And, it's a challenging time. I'm on to the next thing now. Like I'm already cooking some of the Thanksgiving dinner already. I mean, I'm firing it up, man. I got the Durkee onions, and of course I got the green bean casserole. I already put that together. It's in the fridge. It's refrigerated. It's ready to go. And plus, look, cream of mushroom soup. If you don't mix it with any kind of consumable product. That thing holds up, man.
I mean, nothing goes bad in the refrigerator. You're right.
I call that Thanksgiving spackle. Is what that is right there. I look at this kind of stuff and I just say to myself, okay, I'm on to the next thing. Like I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. What's the election's going to happen tonight? We're clearly in 2022 mode. I'm ready to start talking about the election after tonight. Let's get Thanksgiving underway, and then let's get right to Christmas. And then right after Christmas, I want to hit Easter 2 weeks later, Daytona 500, and then it's on to the beach. We're back in the summer, man. Let's get the fireworks out. Oh, somebody just texted me and said he doesn't know the answer on candy being left over, but he believes that as of now, the fireworks from the 4th of July are still probably good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those are apparently still going to happen. That's... and no, for the guy who's being a smart guy to me on the message, I would never hand fireworks out at Halloween. I mean, nobody know that you're not being like, honey, we're out of candy. Get the M80s. This is really, don't eat this, kid. Okay? It's just a terrible thing to do. 704-570-1110. So if you do have thoughts on how I get rid of this stuff, that would be very helpful. Because otherwise I'm going to eat it and my teeth are going to rot out of my face. And that I cannot do. That I absolutely will not do. Elon Musk. I talked about Jeff Bezos a little while ago, and Elon Musk has been in the news. Elon Musk wants to build a couple of tunnels to get people from inside Fort. He wants to get people to Fort Lauderdale beaches. He wants to build a tunnel that'll go a couple of miles, but it's going to be for public transportation down the road, and the people will be transported to the beach in Teslas. So that's his next big idea that he's talking about. I want to talk to Rich because Rich is being helpful here. Rich, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, thanks.
So this is my idea with the candy. You
yes.
know what I mean? Like, because I got a ton of it, man.
Mm-hmm.
My idea with the candy is we hold on to it. We give it away at Christmas. We give it away at Easter. We hold on to it to next Halloween. There's so much preservatives in that stuff.
Really?
It's good for decades.
Like, so you're saying like Jolly Ranchers and Laffy Taffy and gummy bears will still be good?
Yes, man.
I thought...
It's like one big preservative anyways and a bunch of sugar. It's fine, man. Like you said, it rots your teeth out. It's good for something.
What do you have? What do you have most of? What's the candy you have the most of?
So look, I got a few bags of that. The I don't know, the 100-pack of the, you know, the Reese's peanut butter cups, the Roots, the Snickers, and
the little ones
of a Milky Ways and Three Musketeers. That stuff will last for decades.
Nougat is pretty robust, man.
And Laffy Taffy, are you kidding me? That stuff's gonna last till. Come on, man. We'll have that stuff after like a nuclear war. That stuff will be around, man.
You know what? You talked me into it, Rich. I'm gonna keep it because when all this stuff collapses, it may happen. That's gonna be currency, dude.
It is. Good times, Brett. I love you, man.
Thanks, man. I love you too. That's Rich. That's Rich. News Talk 1110 993 WBT, Brent Winterbull Show. That music means it's time for Mark Garrison. And we're going to preview Charlotte at 6. You know, it's my favorite time of the day.
I've heard that before.
Because I'm going to head home.
That's right.
And I got baseball.
Get to leave.
No, but I got baseball and I got elections and we got a whole bunch of stuff going on out there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Although, we're going to start with apathy in action for voters in Mecklenburg County.
Indeed.
They're not going to the polls in record numbers.
Unbelievable.
The county's 6 towns picking leaders. But, you know, it's kind of like Mayberry. No real hot-button issues this year, so most folks are just sitting it out. Not that way in Virginia, though. Big Ooh. Turnout there. How are you predicting that one?
I think Youngkin is going to win.
Do you?
I do. But you know what? You got to see what those mail-in ballots look like. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The secret sauce.
In the last hour, CDC committee says, vax those children. It was interesting listening in on the meeting. Some doctors there today objected, saying the adverse reactions were swept under the rug.
Wow.
But we'll let you hear some of that debate, but the decision is in. Big event to help veterans plan next week in Charlotte. Really cool at the stadium uptown. We'll tell you about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know what 6:35 is. Dirty Restaurant Tuesday.
How dirty is it?
It's so dirty that one restaurant closed because they couldn't keep the food cold.
Oh, wow. That's terrible.
That's pretty bad.
Does nobody have a porch in the morning? Just keep it outside?
Got any ice?
Get some ice. Hey, by the way, one of the things I talked about with Bo when we were crossing the streams, up in Virginia, there were disputes over whether or not you were supposed to be masked at the polling place. And so there was a kerfuffle about that.
Apparently, a few people showed up around here today and did not want to wear one, but you did have to wear one.
To vote? That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right, my man. I'm looking forward to Charlotte at 6.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. That's Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6. And that's going to be just after 6 o'clock. When else would it be wonderful? Well, it could be 6 a.m., but I don't think he's been doing tease 12 hours in advance. And Bo doesn't know about the Charlotte at 6 a.m., but Bo does Charlotte at 6 a.m., but in a different kind of a way. He does the Bo Thompson show to cover the stuff in the overnight. And I'm going to dig my way out of here before too long. Here's the thing, though. When you look at what it is that's happening in this election, understand that there is so much pent-up energy in the electorate because there hasn't been there's been a something for the left to like and something for the right to like in this election. What the left has liked is that Donald Trump remains this weird boogeyman that you kind of invoke when you want to try to see if you can make a Republican run away. I mean, because that's all Terry McAuliffe did for the last 3-4 weeks was mention Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. And Donald Trump never went down and campaigned for Glenn Youngkin. He has said that he supports him, and he has said that he hopes his supporters vote for Youngkin. He doesn't like Terry McAuliffe. And Youngkin has played a very strategic game by not bringing in Trump to be an omnipresent figure. But even when Trump doesn't show up to campaign and is not part of the race, Democrats are still invoking him. What the Republicans, the conservatives, the America First folks, the MAGA Nation people, what they like about this is you actually get a chance on the national stage and, frankly, the international stage. Make no mistake, there is a very specific reason that Joe Biden wanted to get back to the United States by the time the results of this election came out, because he didn't want to be asked about it overseas. Republicans, conservatives, MAGA Nation, you name it, those folks are able to now activate and see if there is it's like a free acid test, right? You get to say, okay, what happens if we run on the school board thing, if we run on the CRT thing, if we run on the sex identity stuff, if we run on all of those different pieces? What then happens on that? Is that social justice stuff that toxic to not just the base, but the independents? You know, you're seeing women have been a vital part of these races over these last, you know, years, okay? Go back to, say, 2016, and women have been driving a lot of this. Women either liked or hated Hillary Clinton. They either liked or hated Donald Trump. Then you get to the midterms. You get to the pink hat marches. You get to all the kind of stuff that was going on. Women are going to be key in all of this, and education is an issue that definitely cuts more towards the position of active women, moms, people who have young children, people who have older children, grandparents, what have you. Those are huge issues. And hanging out there at the same time, though, is this. This is coming out of The Hill. Democrats on cusp of sweeping deal on Biden agenda after months of tense talks, delayed votes, and internal clashes. Democratic leaders are on the cusp of solidifying a deal on President Biden's sweeping domestic agenda, setting the stage for the House to vote on both a bipartisan infrastructure bill and the larger social benefits package in coming days. You want to take action on whether or not this is going to happen within coming days? Because we keep going back to Joe Manchin, and Joe Manchin has made it clear he doesn't like what's in that social package. He doesn't like the climate change stuff. It comes from a state that's got coal. So what Pelosi's doing is she's going to ram this thing through the House, send it to the Senate, and they're going to try to exert as much pressure as they can. And what this will be, it will be the thing that they use to cushion a Youngkin win. If Youngkin wins tonight, tomorrow on CNN and messy NBC, you will see nonstop talk of insurrectionists, Donald Trump, and the deal that's now going to get cut. But understand this. This could easily represent the end of the Clinton presence, for all intents and purposes, in the body politic. The long national nightmare involving Clintonism might finally be over if Terry McAuliffe is dispatched tonight and does not win the governorship of Virginia. Could he come back and run again on another date? Yeah, probably could do it. But for all intents and purposes, Clintonism is finished. We're into Bidenism. Bidenism is awfully scary, but we'll keep you company and updated and informed throughout the process. I want to thank TJ and Josh and Anna and Bo, Mark Garrison, and of course, our very good friend, Boomer Von Cannon. And each and every one of you, enjoy the baseball. If that's your thing tonight, I say go Braves. And don't forget to watch the election coverage. We'll pick it up tomorrow, beginning at 3. I am Brett Witterbull. Charlotte at 6 is up next. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT.